As I found the world, so do I leave it, with naught but what I've done, with but the craft I've mastered, with what regard I've won. Arcendian Funeral Rite. Chapter 1. Cursed.
"You're in your will yet, lad?"
Someone shouted the words in Herrick's ear over the din of the crowded barroom. He turned from the group of knights and housegirls he stood with and found the brewer, Mags, leaning across the bar behind him. The old man fixed him with a look, drunk and earnest, and indicated the winch clock on the bar. 5 minutes to midnight. 5 minutes left of Herrick's 19th year and his last full day of life.
"You best ride it quick," Mags said, "or Rudy'll snatch up your things before your corpse is cold."
Herrick's throat tightened. He clenched his jaw against a rising rage. Rage at the unfairness of his fate, at the madness that spawned it, and he shook it off. He would not end like the others, howling or blubbering for mercy. He tipped his cup back and took a deep drink from his wine. "The night is still young."
"Don't make light of it, son. This is the day."
"You think I don't remember?"
"Just trying to help."
"You're trying to clear me out before my death spoils the party." The old man scratched his stubbled chin.
"Well, it would cramp the mood considerable."
Herrick managed a wry smile. He pointed to the winch clock that towered above him, a column of woodwork on the bar like a coffin on end.
"When the 12th chime sounds at midnight, my precious doom has till sunset tomorrow to find me. Plenty of time to write a will."
The brewer nodded and grimaced as if struggling with emotion. He drew Herrick close, old eyes glistening with unshed tears.
"You know, there isn't a one of us here who wouldn't have stopped your mother if we'd known. I'd have killed her if I had to. I swear it."
Unable to speak, Herrick downed the last of his wine.
"You're right about one thing," he said, pulling away. "It's time to leave the celebration to my guests."
Before Mags could object, Herrick stepped on a chair and onto the bar beside the winch clock. From the back of the clock case, he drew out the crowbar he'd hidden inside, and in two quick moves, he wrenched out the mainspring to the accompaniment of cracking wood and outraged chimes.
"What?"
Mags choked.
"Who's gonna pay for that?"
"Keep your hair on." Herrick dropped his purse of coins on the bar and steadied himself against the clock, forever stopped at 1 minute to midnight. The clamor drew all eyes to the bar. A few present could read clocks and understood his joke. Most simply saw him on the bar and fell silent, expecting a speech from their host. Herrick looked out into the smoky hall at the sea of upturned faces. In the gloom at the back of the hall, orange embers of ragleaf pipes pulsed like fireflies, and the place had fallen so silent he imagined he could hear the embers crackle with each pulse. Among the expectant faces, he saw mostly locals of Gallows Ferry, familiars with whom he'd grown to manhood. Others were strangers passing through the outpost on the way to the free lands. He'd invited them all, and not a single enemy stood among them, for he'd drugged Rudy and his crew and left them sleeping with the hogs. A double pleasure, that.
"Almost time," he called,
with a room-filling bravado he did not feel.
"And it's going to stay that way for the rest of the night."
He raised the mainspring in mock triumph to a roar of applause.
"I have no gloomy speech for you," he assured them. "We've said our farewells, and this night is for celebration. I leave you now to finish the wine and continue as if this night would never end. For you, I brought up all the wine in Gallows Ferry, so it will be a great affront to my memory if a drop remains at daybreak."
Applause shook the timbered walls. Gentlemen and freemen saluted with swords or raised cups. Housegirls and maids threw flowers and other favors on the bar. In their faces, he saw affection and curiosity and pity. For that moment, Herrick was a hero. He bowed, savoring the feeling for a single aching heartbeat, then flung the mainspring to the crowd and departed for his chambers through the service door behind the bar. Karis waited for him in the passage, illumined by a single candle near the door. Like all horse-touched, she was even bigger than the average man, so she filled the narrow servant's corridor, hair touching the ceiling and elbows brushing walls. If Herrick hadn't expected her, he might have stepped back to give way, mistaking her in the dim light for one of the knights rooming at the inn who sometimes got lost in its passages. As the roar of the bar washed through the open door and past Herrick, Karis flinched and clapped her hands to her ears. He shut the door quickly and flashed a reassuring smile.
"Ready? I expect they'll be on my heels."
She lowered her hands, but kept her stare on the floor between them, rocking from foot to foot.
Even with the door closed, the bar's clamour distressed her horse-touched senses, so it wouldn't have surprised him if she turned and fled, or worse, curled in a ball with her hands to her ears. He'd seen it before, but he could never predict when she'd collapse and when she'd stand firm.
"Nothing I can't handle," she murmured.
"Good." Shrill voices rose in the bar, and her eyes jumped to the door behind him.
"This is private, folks," said Mags on the other side. "Herrick's done said his farewells."
"Oh, we can't leave him alone tonight,"
said a voice Herrick recognised as Anna.
"You know he's writing his will."
"Yes, and you aim to kiss your way into it," said Mags. "But I ain't letting you, so get."
"He ain't slept alone all summer,"
Anna said.
"Who's he got up there? Ain't that simple lady horse touched, is it?"
"I said get. I got drink to pour."
Kerris's jaw clenched. She turned sideways and gestured for Herrick to pass, pressing her back to the side of the passage. It made little space for him to slip by, and since she was almost two heads taller, her breast stood level with his nose. She blushed, for though she tried to hide her feminine parts in loose-fitting men's gear, there was no denying their presence. His skin tingled at the thought of brushing front to front, and the notion summoned the void back to his chest and a sting to his eyes. He bit the inside of his lip and turned sideways to sidle past. Before he took a step, she grasped his arms below the shoulders and lifted until his feet left the ground and his head bumped the ceiling.
"Or you could just lift me," he said.